Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the very bottom of Daf Tes Amud Beis, the Mishnah, 3 lines from the bottom. Before we go further, just glance at the outside margin. You'll notice we have a Nosei, which is a topic heading that we provide in our marked Gemaras. And we've written, Ma Bein Shiloh V'Yushalayim. Shiloh was a place that the Mishkan stood for a period of 369 years, that had followed the 14 years of conquest and division of the land. In fact, the Mishkan in Shiloh had a stone wall, as opposed to the portable Mishkan that one may be familiar with from the Psukim in the Torah and Parshas, Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Pekudei, which deal with the Binyan HaMishkan and the Big Day Kehuna. That was a portable Mishkan. The Mishkan featured in, or the Mishkan that existed in Shiloh, had a stone wall and a fabric cover. The covering that was used in the portable Mishkan, that was the same type of covering that existed in Shiloh. However, the walls were stone. It was a permanent structure. After Shiloh, there followed a period of 57 years in which the Heter Bomos set in again, where personal altars were allowed. And following that 57-year period, the Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech in Yerushalayim. So our Mishnah features the differences between Shiloh and Yerushalayim. Ein bein Shiloh Yerushalayim, elo, shebeshilo oichlin kotshim kalim umayisru sheni b'chol horoye, ubirushalayim lefin machoymo. The difference that is featured in the mission is that in the case of Shiloh, Kodshim Kalim, light-level holiness sacrifices, things like a Korban Shlomim, and Meiser Sheni, the tithes that were taken off during the seven-year Shemitah cycle, during years 1, 2, 4, and 5, a Meiser Sheni was tithed. That tenth of one's produce, in the case of Shiloh, along with the Kodshim Kalim, were in any area, or we'll call it the radius around Shiloh, that one could see from that point Shiloh. If you could see Shiloh at any given point, you were still allowed to eat in that area Kodshim Kalim and Meiser Sheni. With regard to Yerushalayim, the boundaries for Kodshim Kalim and Meiser Sheni were within the walls of Yerushalayim. V'kan kodshe kodshe nechon lefnin min akloyim. As far as the area for kodshe kodshim consumption, high-level sacrifices, for example, korban oshem, korban chatos, those were to be consumed within the azora of the Mishkan and the azora of the Beis HaMikdash. And the term used for azora in this case is within the kloim. Kedusha Shiloh, Yesh Achreya Heter. We mentioned this in our introduction, that following the destruction of Shiloh, there was a reinstatement of the allowance of personal altars. And as we continue on the top of Daf Yud Omer Aleph, Ukedushas Yerushalayim Ein Achreya Heter. But with regard to Yerushalayim, even in the event that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed, there is no allowance, or there is no reinstating of the Heter Bomos. This issue will be subject to discussion later in the Gemara. Before continuing further in the Gemara, let's glance at the outside margin, the Nosei, the topic heading. We've written in Kedushas Beis HaMikdash, the Kidsho L'Shaita, the Beis HaMikdash, when it was built, it was certainly built with holiness. Hayim Kidsho Nami Losud Lavo. Is that holiness permanent as well? It's true, our Mishnah took a stand on the topic, and it said that after Yerushalayim there is no allowance for personal altars anymore, giving one the feeling that it was of a, that the Kedushas Yerushalayim was of a permanent nature. Nafgamina, our, in our note we add, Acharei Churban Yerushalayim, Yeshuv Heter Bomos. That will be the point of difference. Namely, if you say that the Kedushas Yerushalayim is permanent, there will not be an allowance for personal altars. If you say that the Kedushas Yerushalayim is not permanent, then upon the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there would be a reinstatement of a personal altar allowance. So now we turn to the Gemara. Omar of Yitzchok, he makes a point. We've also indicated this by the long point marking. You can see a nun that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line indicating the nun indicating nekuda, a point. And the length of the point extends all the lines of Gemara that are parallel to this vertical dashed line. So Rav Yitzchok says, Shamati shemakrivim beveis chonyo bezman hazeh. I heard that one is allowed to offer sacrifices in a place called Beis Chonyo nowadays. Nowadays meaning after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. A word about Beis Chonyo. Let's glance immediately to Rashi. Four lines from the top, you notice Rashi, Beis Chonyo. Mizbeach Chonyo, beno shel Shimon HaTzadik. There was a Mizbeach, an altar, in a place that was established by the son of Shimon HaTzadik. Bono Boma B'Mitzrayim L'Shem Shamayim K'damrinu Maseches Menachos. The Gemara here is taking a particular stand on the Beis Chonyo issue, and that is that this son of Shimon HaTzadik, he had run off to Mitzrayim. Shimon HaTzadik, bear in mind, was a towering figure that lived during the second Beis HaMikdash period. He was a member of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And his son went off to Mitzrayim. The full story is featured in Maseches Menachos at the end of the Masechta Daf Kuf Tes Amud Beis. And Rabbi Yitzchok is saying that, well, he heard that nowadays one could offer sacrifices on the altar erected by Chonyo, the son of Shimon HaTzadik. Now, this is premised on 2 points. Aleph, Kosavar Beis Chonyo Lav Beis Avodah Zarahi. This is assuming that the temple that Chonyo established in Mitzrayim was not erected for idolatry. That is a matter of debate, but this position that Rabbi Yitzchok is reflecting assumes the position that it was not set up as a temple of idolatry. V'kosovar kedusha rishoni kitshel l'shaita v'lo kitshel l'osid lavo. And the other assumption is that the original kedusha that was part of Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, was while it was standing. That's Kitcha L'Shaita, for its time. But not La'osid Lavo, meaning not of a permanent nature. Namely, that upon its destruction, that sanctity became voided. Dichtiv, the basis for this is found in the following posuk. Ki lo'i bosem ad ato el hamenucha v'el hanachla. Menucha zu Shiloh. The word Menucha in this pasuk is a reference to Shiloh and the Mishkan that was set up there. Nachlo zu Yerushalayim. Makish Nachlo leMenucha. We are supposed to compare Nachlo to Menucha. Ma Menucha, just like Menucha, which is associated with Shiloh, Yesh Achrea Heter. There is, everyone agrees, that with the destruction of Shiloh, there was an allowance for personal altars. In other words, Shiloh did not represent a place of permanent sanctity, thereby precluding sacrificial offerings any other place. Af nachlo yeshachre heter, so too with regard to Shalayim, upon its destruction, there is a reinstating of the heter, the allowance of personal altars, thereby showing or demonstrating that Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash did not have permanent holiness. Omru Lei, the ones who heard Rabbi Yitzchok, they asked him, Amris, did you say that? Omar Lehu Lo, and Rabbi Yitzchok all of a sudden denies having ever said what we thought he said. Omar Rava, Rava on the other hand takes opposition. He says, Ho Elohim. Elohim is an expression that refers to the Almighty, but in this case it's a type of oath or swearing. He says, Omrah, Rabbi Yitzchak did say that, the Gamirna lo mine, and I learned it from him. In other words, Rava is telling us that I heard from Rabbi Yitzchak that Makriven bebeis chonya bezman hazeh. If that be the case that he in effect said it, so why would he have changed Todarbe to back out or change his mind? Answer: Mishum Kasha de Rav Mori, because of a difficulty that Rav Mori raised, because of the difficulty which we will see very shortly in the Gemara, because of this Kasha that Rav Mori raises, this caused Rav Yitzchak to reevaluate his original opinion. Or the original statement. The Rav Mori, that we said, the Kasha de Rav Mori, the Moisiv Rav Mori. Rav Mori raises a question. We have a long question marking to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara. You see the kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. This represents the length of his question. He raises the following opposition, and we have a Tanaic source, in fact, our Mishnah. Kedushas Shiloh yesh achrei heter, Kedushas Yerushalayim ein achrei heter. Kedushas Shiloh has an allowance after its destruction, but Kedushas Yerushalayim does not, indicating that Yerushalayim is of permanent sanctity. V'oid Tanya and V'oid Tanan, and we have another Tanaic source. Mishibol Yerushalayim ne'esru habamos, when the when they came to Yerushalayim and built a Beis HaMikdash, personal altars were forbidden. V'lo hoyo lahem oid heter, v'hi hoyso l'nachlo. And after the setting up of Yerushalayim, there was no further allowance for personal altars. And Yerushalayim was l'nachlo. We saw this referred to in the pasuk before, kilobosim arad el hamenucha vel hanachlo. So here we're saying the he Yerushalayim was the nachlo. The Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim represented that. In other words, from these two sources that we see cited here, Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash is portrayed as having permanent sanctity, thereby precluding the offering of sacrifices outside. Well, that seems to be a pretty strong point. So the question then is, where does the original Rav Yitzchak statement stand? And as far as Rava is concerned, Rava says that the original statement was made. So does it have any basis, or is it just completely obliterated by the presentation of this Tanaic literature? The Gemara answers, Tanoihi, the whole issue of permanent sanctity vested in Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash is a machloikes tanoim. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's say a word or two about the structure. In the outside margin, you'll notice we have a note called Mivneh. Mivneh means structure. We have a house form, and we refer to this as a Ma'akav. This is an attempt to keep track of the back and forth nature of the Gemara's discussion. So this house form you'll see with the point facing up. In our markings, we've enclosed the word tanoi in this marking. The Gemara is declaring that the issue is a Tanaic controversy. So tanoi are nisyonos laharos de'inyan kedushas Yerushalayim kitshagam lo sidlavo havi machlokas tanoim. These are attempts to show that the matter of the sanctity of Yerushalayim being of a permanent nature is in fact a machlokas tanoim. And then we'll see the house form flipping over. And that's called a dechia, a rejection. Let's get a bird's eye view of the Gemara. We are holding right now in a question position, namely, a question challenging the original statement of Rav Yitzchak. And with this question in mind, we also understand why Rav Yitzchak may have backed out of his original position. Namely, the question presented here shows that Yerushalayim has a permanent holy status without any heter bomos upon the destruction of the Yerushalayim Beis HaMikdash. How does that fit in with the original Rabbi Yitzchak statement? So that's against it. The Gemara then maintains that the issue is a machlokas tanoim, and we have that in our first house, and there's a little one with a house around it, the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara. All of this piece of Gemara that's represented by the vertical dashed line following that one is to demonstrate, an attempt to demonstrate, that the subject is a machlokas tanoim. At the conclusion of this dashed line under the one, you'll notice a dalid that's encircled, that's with a house around it. However, it's upside down with the point facing downwards. This is a dechia. In other words, the attempt to show that the subject is a machlokas tanoim will be rejected. Following that, you'll notice, though, a number two with a house form around it, point facing up, and also the corresponding house form in the Gemara, around the word tanoi, saying, okay, if what we tried to show till this point was not a machlokas tanoim, in other words, in our attempt to show that Kedushas Yushalayim of being a Kitchel Lashaita and Kitchel Lasid Lava was not a machlokas tanoim, at this point we will try to show you once again that it is. Where will we see it? So when we get to the number two, we will be presenting some more Tanaic sources. You may notice Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi's name is double underlined on the lower part of the page. If you do notice that, the Gemara will show two sources in which it seems that there's a contradiction within Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. In order to extricate itself from that predicament, the Gemara on Omid Beis will tell us that, in fact, there are either two opinions to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, or one of the sources is, in fact, not Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, so that there isn't a contradiction, but there, in fact, are two Tanoim. One position saying that Yerushalayim's Kedusha was permanent, and the other one showing that it's not permanent. And with that, we will then have, in fact, the machlokas tanoim that we were looking for. So now we turn to the first attempt. Tanoihi. The Gemara wants to show, once again, that the issue of permanent holy status to Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim is, in fact, a Tanaic controversy. So we have a Tanaic source. You can see the frame around it, and in this source you'll see underlined Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, you'll see a discussion concerning the building of the Bayis Sheni, the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Shomati kishoyu boinin b'heichal, oisin kloyim l'heichal, ukloyim l'azora. That while they were building the second Beis HaMikdash, they had set up curtains around the area that would form the heichal and that would form the azora, the temple courtyard. The thought at this point is, this is what we call the Havamina, that these curtains were set up in place of walls in order to allow this offering of sacrifices while the area was being, while the Beis HaMikdash was actually being built. And he goes on with a technical clarification. He says, Elo sheba heichal boinin mibachutz. When it came to the building of the heichal, the curtains were placed around what would form the inner perimeter of the heichal, namely, the stones were placed on the outside of the curtains. And once the stones were finished being constructed, the curtains would have been now surrounded by stones, the stones being placed around the curtain. Uba azora boinin mibithnim. With regard to the temple courtyard, the curtains were on the outside of where the stones would be set up. In other words, the curtain represented the outermost perimeter, and the stones set up as walls within the curtains. The Omar Rabbi Yeshua, Shomati, Rabbi Yeshua tells us that he heard Shemakriven Afalpi Shein Bayis, that sacrifices can be offered even if there is no temple. Oichlin Kotche Kotche Afalpi Shein Kloim. Sacrifices of high holy nature, like a korban chatos and a korban osham, could be eaten even if there is no wall of an azora. Kochim kalim u'maiser sheni. These things, these light level sanctity korbanos and the maiser sheni tithe, afal pi she'ein choma, can be eaten even if there is no wall. Mipnei shekedusha rishona kitsha l'shaita v'kitsha l'asid lavo. As Rabbi Yeshua says, the reason for this allowance of the offering of korbanos and their subsequent consumption can take place even if the Beis HaMikdash is not there. Let's just assume that you'll be offering the sacrifices where the Beis HaMikdash once stood, but even if the structure is not there, you can nevertheless conduct sacrificial procedure. And why is that? Because the Kedusha Rishona, the original Kedusha that was vested in the Beis HaMikdash, was Kitcha L'Shaita. It was holy at its time. The Kitcha L'Sodava, which means it also had a permanent Kedusha. So this would be Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. Michlal, we can infer, the Rabbi Lozer, Sofar Lo Kitcha L'Sodava. Rabbi Lozer does not agree. We are going to assume. And if we were to stop at this point, then we have the issue of Kitcha L'Sodava as a Machlokas Tanoim. Rabbi Yeshua holding it is Kitcha L'Sodava, and that's why we underlined the end phrase of the Bereb, of the Tanaic source. And Rabbi Lezer, who was at the beginning of the source, would say it's not Kitcha L'Sodava. Omar Le, Ravina Le Ravashi. Now, you notice the house form flipped over. Ravina says to Ravashi, Mimai, who says that the analysis we just offered is to be accepted? Dilma de Kuli Almo, Kedusha Rishona Kitchula Shaita Vik Kitchula Sidlavo. It may be that everybody agrees that it's Kitcha Leosid Lavo, including Rabbi Eliezer. Umor Mai Deshmiya Le Kaomar, Umor Mai Deshmiya Le Kaomar. Each one, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, said over what they had heard. But they are not saying over things, points that necessitate the establishment of Kedusha, of holiness, when that had already been established earlier. Well, the Chitemo, if you'll say that there was already an original Kedusha that was permanent, Kaloyim L'Rabelozer Lomali, so what was the need for the curtains while they were building the second Beis HaMikdash? If the original Beis HaMikdash holiness was permanent, why the curtains? The answer is as an expression of modesty, that while they were building the Beis HaMikdash, the eyes of the public should not be gawking or peering upon the construction site. Hence, curtains were placed around the area, and the building took place within the curtains. So from what we saw above, Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, the issue of Kitcha L'Sodava is not necessarily a Machlokes Tanoim. And each one was simply saying what they had heard. But no Machlokes around the issue of Kitcha L'Sodava. Elo ki hani tanoi. Rather, the issue of Kitcha L'Shaita, Kitcha L'Sodava as a Machlokes Tanoim will be as follows. Desanya. So, as we mentioned earlier, the attempt to point this out will take a while. And that's why we have in our markings the number 2 to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a little house around it and a vertical dashed line continuing down the upper part of Yud Amid Beis, indicating how much Gemara one has to learn before he can see that the issue of Kitcha L'Sodava is a Machlokes Tanoim. On the outside margin, you'll notice we have a Mivneh note with a double underline featured. It's true, we mentioned this earlier in our introduction, but now we're dealing with it at hand, so let's see the note. The double underline is featured, and it highlights Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Simun Zeh, this marking, Mu'ad, is designed, Lahavlit Stiru B'dvarov, to point out what will appear to be a contradiction in his teaching. Uvahemshech, Hayishuv L'Stiru Zu, Yehei Ha'ochocha D'Tanoihi. In the continuation of the Gemara later, we will say that the resolution of this contradiction, in fact, will be the demonstration or the proof that we have a Tanaic controversy on hand. So we continue in the Gemara. Desanya, Omar Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, Loma Monu Chachomim Es Elu. We must say a word of introduction. In addition to the Beis HaMikdash, there is also a concept known as Bote Orei Choma. These are walled cities that were walled from the time of Yehoshua, and the Bote Orei Choma carry with them special halachas regarding the sales of houses. that take place. A house that's sold in a Boter Choma, the owner can insist on it being resold to him if he decides to sell it, provided he makes his decision within a year. That's a halacha that's unique to Bote Ore Choma. There are other halachas that are associated with Ore Choma, which we won't get into right now. It's sufficient to say, though, that the concept of an Ir Choma has to do with a certain sanctity associated with a walled city. We can call this, as Tosfos uses the expression, it's called Kedushas Choma. This Kedushas Choma is something that is associated with the Beis HaMikdash as well, so that even though we may be speaking about walled cities, the walled cities is being used or presented here interchangeably with the Beis HaMikdash, being that this concept of a sanctity achieved by having a wall around an area is associated one with the other, namely Beis HaMikdash with the Bote Ore Choma. So the source that we just started reading makes reference to the end of Maseches Erechin. At the end of Maseches Erechin, there is a list of 9 cities that are listed as being Bote Ore Choma. So Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi says, Loma Manu Chachomim Es Elu. Why were those cities enumerated? The truth is that there were many more than 9 walled cities in Eretz Yisrael. So why are those featured? Shekesha'olu b'nei ha'goyla, when there was a return of the exiles from the Golos Bovel, and we're talking about the time that is associated with Ezra and Nehemiah at the beginning period of the building of the Bayis Sheni. Not being what we're saying now is not exact to the year, but we're giving a time frame. When they came back to Eretz Yisrael, Motsu es elu v'kitshum. They found these cities, the cities that are listed there in Maseches Erechin by name. They found them and they sanctified them. Aval harishonos botlu mishabot laharetz. All the other cities that had been walled, they lost their sanctity when the destruction of the Eretz Yisrael took place, namely the Churban Bayis Rishon period. Alma Kosovar, we see from this approach that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi holds Kedushu Rishon Kishul Shaita Veloi Kishul Asud Lavo. The original sanctity that these places had was for their time, but not of a permanent nature. Veraminu, and now we raise what appears to be a contradiction in Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Om Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, V'chi Elu Bilvad Hoyu, were there just those 9 cities mentioned at the end of Maseches Erechin? Valo, Kvar, Nemar, there's a pasuk that indicates Shishim Ir Kol Chevel Argoiv, Uksiv Kol Eile Orim Betsuros Choyma Gavoya. There's psukim that are found in Sefer Dvorim, indicating there were 60 cities in the region of Argov, and they were all fortified walled cities. And we're talking about a pasuk in Sefer Dvorim, which indicates these are walled cities from the time of Yehoshua. Elo lama monu chachomim es elu. So why were those 9 cities mentioned in Maseches Erechin when we see here a reference to many more? Shekisha'olu b'nei hagola, when they came back in the time of the second temple period, Motsu Elu, and there's a brief skipping that we do in the Gemara, and that takes us to the second line from the top. When they came back from the Gola, Motsu Elu, they counted them off, they enumerated them, Velo Elu Bilvad, and these are not the only ones that are categorized as walled cities. Elo Kol Shetalu Chomasuris Bildecho Mevosecho, Shemkefes Choyma Mimos Yeshua Ben Nun. Anything, any city, any place that occurs to you as or becomes known to you through tradition that was walled from the time of Yeshua, called Hamitzvus Halolu Nohagin Bo. All of the mitzvahs that are associated with walled cities are binding in any of these additional places that you happen to have a tradition on. Because the holy nature that they had was not only for their time, but was of a permanent nature. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's just go back over the bracketed section. The reason for these brackets is because that which is contained within them is inaccurate, and the Gemara itself straightens things out. So we must go over the bottom line again. The Price had raised the question of why were nine cities mentioned in Maseches Erechin when there were in fact many more walled cities. So the Gemara says, Shekesha'olu b'nei ha-gola, motsu elu v'kidshum. When the b'nei gola came back, they came and sanctified those cities, or we could say re-sanctified those cities. So with that, the Gemara raises in wonderment, what do you mean re-sanctified? We know that in this very source it says there's no need to re-sanctify. The end of the source says the sanctity had been of a permanent nature. So the Gemara asks with wonderment, Kidshum, what, they have to re-sanctify them? Hashto ho amri lo tzricho le kedushi. We are going to say in the continuation of this source, which that we already read, that they don't need re-sanctification. Ela motzu es elu umonum. The nine cities mentioned in the end of Maseches Erechin are cities that they found and they listed them off. V'lo evil bilvad, not only those. Ela kol shatala loch masuris biyadech marasav shemuyav schom yoshim benun kol emisusol noagim bo meshi kedusha rishon yishol shaita v'kidsha laosid lovoi. This is the end of the source. Notice we've dashed, underlined the expression v'kidsha laosid lovoi. Make use of the little arrow that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. It indicates, look for an arrow on Omid Aleph. So if we flip back to Omid Aleph, try to skim down the left-hand side of the Gemara text, and you'll see toward the bottom another little arrow indicating Omid Beis. On that line, there is also a dashed underlining where it says, V'lo kidsha la'asid lavo. There we've squiggle underlined the word V'lo to give it a special emphasis that there is no permanent Kedusha. That was on the heels of the first Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi statement. The second Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi statement culminates in V'kitsha of Asid Lavo, that it does have a permanent sanctity. Kashya de Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shmuel. So this presents a contradiction within Rabbi Shmuel. The Gemara answers, number one, Trei Tanoi Aliba de Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. What we are seeing here are two sources reporting Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, but each opinion in what he, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, had said is in fact is at odds or disagrees with the other opinion of what he said. So it's not we're not saying that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi himself is inherently contradictory. There's a controversy as to what Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi ever said. V'iboy esema, ha Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Yossi omra. The second approach to resolving these two sources simply says that the second source that said Kitchel Osilovo, the number two source that said it was a permanent, that the walled cities had a permanent holiness status, is not Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, it's Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Yossi. He is the one that said it, Disanya, Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Yossi Omar. Asher loy choymo. This is a pasuk in the context of the walled cities. And it's darshaned, the word lo, you'll notice, is spelled with a vav and an aleph. And it's darshaned as follows. Even if these cities do not have walls right now, the hoya loy koydem lochem, but had walls originally at the time of Yoshua, they have permanent kedushas choma status. And this is the machlokes tanoim. So what are we saying? Source number one, which indicated lo kitchel osed lavo, that's Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Source number two that says kitchel osed lavo is Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Yossi. Two different tanoim arguing on this topic. So with that, we come to the end of our demonstration or our proof that the issue of Kitcha l'shaita kitcha l'osad lavo is a machloikes tanoim. We now start a new sukya, and before we begin it, we take a look at our nosei, our topic heading. As you look ahead, by the way, in the Gemara text, you'll notice a vast number of geometric forms and shapes and a lot of structural activity, which hopefully we will make sense out of through our introduction. So the nosei, you'll notice on the outside margin, mahi mashmos haloshon vayehi ba'mikra. When you see the word vayehi, there are many psukim that begin with that expression. What does the word vayehi indicate? B'shlav Rishon, at the first stage of this Gemara, these stages will be represented by bow tie shapes with a Roman numeral number 1, and you can see that pretty much across from here in the Gemara. And if you scan down the right-hand side of the Gemara text till you hit a number 2, at that point, that will represent stage number 2. So, in our note, we've written that B'shlav Rishon, Loshon, the Vayhi equals Loshon Tsar, a Loshon of pain. HaGemara Tovihar Behoi Chochos Lekach, the Gemara will bring many proofs to this. We will see a diamond used in our Gemara, and if you scan down the page, you'll notice a number of these diamonds. Each time, they represent Maimros Sherebi Levi, comments of Rebbe Levi. We will also see the use of a double underline with dots in it. This is highlighting the expression Dovar Zeh Masores Biodenu, either from Me'anshe Knesset Hagdola. That term will be dashed underlined, as you can see right here, and or a Masores Biodenu, a tradition that we have, Me'avosenu, from our predecessors. So if you glance in the Gemara, you'll notice this. You can see this double underline with the dots in it featured pretty much at the beginning of the Gemara now. And in the wide lines, you'll see a couple of them. Don't confuse this marking with a standard double underline without dots in it. This will be featured later, having a different role. So in the meantime, our sugya that will take us into the wide lines till the slash mark, I don't know if everyone can see it, but it's essentially two lines after the Roman numeral number 2 bow tie. Two lines after that, there is a slash mark, after which you have another comment of Rebbe Levi, which essentially is a new discussion. So in the meantime, we're focusing on the expression of Vayehi that you find in the Tanakh, the Gemara. Vayehi bimei Achashverosh. Omer Rabbi Levi, v'itemo Rabbi Yonason. Dover zeh maseres biyodeinu, me'anshei Knesset Gedola. The following we have as a tradition from the members of the Great Assembly. The Anshei Knesset Gedola, which was a body of 120 Talmidei Chachomim. Amongst them at the beginning were actually Nevi'im, at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash period. The Anshei Knesset Gedola, we know, continues well into the second Beis HaMikdash period, and Shimon HaTzadik is referred to in Maseches Ovis as from the surviving members of the Anshei Knesset Gedola, Mishiore Anshei Knesset Gedola. Shimon HaTzadik was a figure who essentially was the grandfather of the Chashmonoyim, if you will. More or less, we're pretty close to the historical period of time, and Chashmonoyim lived in the latter part of the second Beis HaMikdash. So the Anshei Knesset Gedola spanned a couple hundred years. So he says, Rabbi Levi reports that we have a tradition in their name, Kol Mokim Shenemar Vayehi, where you see this expression, Eino El Loshon Tsar. Before we go on, a word about the structure. When we went to stage 2 of the Gemara, you'll notice the bow tie is around a longer expression. There it says, Vayehi Bimei. But first stage, we're assuming that the report from the Anshei Knesset Gedola concerned the word Vayehi, that the word Vayehi indicates a description of pain, of a period that will be painful. And the Gemara lists off a number of examples. In fact, we have them numbered. If you scan ahead, you'll notice that you'll get up to what appears to be number 11, and at each point, either built into the Pasuk or the Gemara will point out that there was trouble. Vayehi bimei Achashverosh. Well, Havei Haman. Vayehi bimei Shvoit HaShoftim. This Pasuk opens up the book of Rus, the book of Ruth, and it says, Vayehi bimei Shvoit HaShoftim, and Havei Rav. There was famine. Vayehi ki hechel ha'odom lo roiv. Vayar Hashem ki rabo ra'os hodom. Here in the pasuk itself, you see, it begins with the word vayehi, and it says that the Almighty saw that there was a lot of evil amongst man. Number four, vayehi benosom mikerem, hova nivne lanu ir. This is featuring the building of the Migdal Bovel, which was a negative event. Vayehi bimei Amraphel asu milchoma. This is in the time of Avraham Avinu, the war of the four kings against the five kings. You see the word vayehi, and a war is featured. Vayehi biyos Yoshua biyericho v'charbo shufa biyado. This features the encounter between Yoshua and a malach that appeared to Yoshua with a drawn sword. And so you can see the word vayehi also introducing an incident of trouble. Vayehi Hashem es Yoshua vayimalu bnei Yisrael. Vayimalu is that they took from the spoils illegally. Vayehi ish echad min haramasayim. This is featuring Elkanah from the father of Shmuel Hanavi, and it says in the Psukim, "Vayehi ki es Chana ohev, Hashem sogar es rachmo." His wife Chana was barren. Vayehi kaasher zokain Shmuel v'lo hochubana bidrachov. The pasuk shows this demonstrates Yeshua when he became older. It says that his sons did not follow his ways. That's negative. Vayehi David l'chol drachov maskiv Hashem imo vayehi shol oyein es David. The pasuk describes David as being successful, but at the same time, Shaul had a feeling of enmity and strain and hate toward David. Vayehi ki yoshav amelch befeso rak atalo tivne habayis. So the pasuk here is describing David HaMelech, who was informed that he would not be allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash that he so much wanted to do. With that, we see a long list of psukim with Vayehi, and they introduce a situation of pain, of trouble. The Gemara asks, and now we have a new marking that we didn't introduce before. We have this volcano or trapezoid form. In the outside margin, you can see we have this listed as a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track, with the narrow part facing up, kushios, and we'll notice how it flips around. Those are tshuvos, answers, responses. So we have a kashi here, a difficulty. V'haksiv vayehi bayom hashmini. There's a pasuk that describes the building of the Mishkan in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, v'tanya. Oysa hayoim hoysa simcha lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu k'yom shenuvu bo shamayim v'aretz. The day of the Mishkan establishment was a day of great joy, like the day of creation. Ksiv hocha vayhi bayom hashmini, uksiv hasam vayhi erev vayhi boker yoim echad. With a similar language in Psukim between the construction of the Mishkan and the creation, and the first day of creation. So, what you have, you do have the word vayhi, and yet you have it associated with simcha, as we dashed underline in this source. The Gemara says maybe that may be true, but there was pain on that very day. Hoshachiv Nodav Aviu, the sons of Aaron, Nodav and Aviu, died that day. V'hoksiv, but what about the following? Vayhi b'shmoinim shana v'arba meir shana. That posuk is, which says it was on the 480th year, that posuk is said in the context of the building of the Beis HaMikdash in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. That was a very positive event. V'hoksiv vayhi kasher ro Yaakov es Rochel, upon Yaakov Avinu meeting with Rochel. So you have the word vayhi, which was a joyous event. V'hoksiv vayhi erev vayhi boker yom echad, the creation day itself. V'ha'iko sheni, wasn't there the second day, which all of the days of creation have this style. Vayhi erev vayhi boker, and you have yom sheni, v'ha'iko shlishi v'ha'iko tuva. You have many, tuva means many. You have all of those days of creation with the word vayhi introducing them. So all of this brings into question that vayhi is automatically associated with pain, when we see that's not the case. Elo Omar Ravashi Kovaihi, whenever you encounter the word Vaihi, Iko Hachi, Viko Hachi, you've got this and you've got this. In other words, you've got both possibilities. Vaihi Bime, Eino Elo Loshon Sa'ar. However, the expression Vaihi Bime, that indicates trouble. Chamishavai Bime Havu. There are five examples of Vaihi Bime in the Tanakh. And each one of them is associated with trouble. Vayi bimei Achashverosh, we already mentioned, that's associated with Haman. Vayi bimei Shvoit HaShoftim, we saw already that above as well with the famine. Vayi bimei Amrofel, we saw that above as well with regard to war. Vayi bimei Ochaz. Ochaz was a king in the second Beis HaMikdash period that was responsible for a lot of idolatry. Vayi bimei Yehoyakim. And the Pasuk features the King Jehoiakim at the very toward the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, which also was a time of great problem. So Vayihi Bimei is associated with difficult periods. And you can see a slash mark appears, introducing a new discussion. And in our markings, it's true that we have the same series that started above continues on the other side of this slash mark, but the fact that even though we have a continuation of markings, that does not automatically mean that we're continuing a sugya. And we accomplish that with our slash marking, indicating that which follows is a new idea, even though it has the same names and similar structural elements. The Omar Rabbi Levi, we have the following tradition from our predecessors. Before we mention from the Anshei Knesset Agdola, here we have a different source, the Avoseinu. Amotz v'amatzio achim havu. This tradition says that Amotz and Amatzio, these are two names, they were brothers. This will become much clearer as we go on in the Gemara. We also want to note that what we're about to deal with is listed in our markings as a long point. This you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a nun that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. The nun represents a nekuda, a point. All of the lines opposite this vertical dashed line form the point. So the point that we began with says that Amotz and Amatzio were brothers. My komash molon, of what significance is that information? The significance is seen through the teaching of Rabbi Yonason. Kol kala shitznua beveis chamiya, any daughter-in-law who practices modesty in the house of her father-in-law, zocha v'yotza v'yotzin mimeno, one malachim, two neviim. A daughter-in-law that practices modesty in the home of her father-in-law can merit having come forth from her kings and prophets. Menolon, well, from where do we see all of that? Mi Tamar, from Tamar, from Sefer Bereishis fame. Maybe a word about this woman. Tamar was the daughter-in-law of Yehuda. Yehuda had a son by the name of Er, and a son by the name of Onan, and also a son by the name of Shelah. When Er was to get married, he married his son to this woman Tamar. Er died, and in an act of Yibum, Tamar married Onan. Onan died. She anticipated marrying Shelah, his remaining son, but that would take a long time, and she saw that she wasn't being given over to Shelah, so she nevertheless wanted very much to continue the seed of that family. So in disguise, she sat at a crossroads appearing to be a harlot, and Yehuda, who had recently lost his wife, Yehuda sought the comfort, we'll say, of Tamar, and conducted relations with her. From that, there are born Peretz and Zorach. From Peretz, there comes forth Malchus Beis David. And many generations later, there is a Boaz is born from that union. Boaz being the great-grandfather of David HaMelech. Boaz had married Rus. So the entire Beis David family, the lineage comes from this union. we will see later that one of the kings of Beis David, his name was Amatziah. Amatziah had a brother named Amoz. We already learned that. That was at the beginning of this particular sukya. Amoz was the father of a famous prophet, Yeshaya, Chazon Yeshaya ben Amoz. So from this union of Tomer and Yehuda comes forth, in fact, kings and prophets. So the Gemara points all of this out now. Dichtiv, Vayir'el Yehuda. Yehuda noticed her. This we mentioned in our introduction. He had come to it. He had lost his wife recently and was on the road, and he saw her. And he thought that she was a standard harlot because her face was covered. Now this expression doesn't make too much sense, and the Gemara points it out. Mishum dekisoponel v'achshav azon, because she had a covered face, he thought she was a harlot. If anything, you would assume that a harlot would not be presenting herself for services with a covered face. Ella, but rather she had quite an uncovered face when Yehuda met her. Ella mishum dekisoponel v'beis chomia, because as long as she was married and with the sons of Yehuda in Yehuda's presence as Yehuda's daughter-in-law, her face was covered. V'lo havi yodalo, Yehuda never had a chance to recognize her. Now Yehuda encounters this woman, in fact, Tamar, on the road with an exposed face. Well, he didn't know who she was. Because when she was in his home, she had always been with a covered face. So as a result of this modesty that she practiced in the home of Yehuda, this union was able to take place. Because if Yehuda knew that this was in fact his daughter-in-law, he never would have conducted relations with her. So because of her having covered the face, it enabled this union to take place. From this union comes forth kings and prophets. Melachim mi David. Melachim, kings, come forth from David. And we gave the background already. She bore a son from this union. One of the twins that were born from the union, his name was Peretz. And Peretz was a forebearer of Boaz. And Boaz was the great-grandfather of David. And from that comes the entire Davidic lineage. Nevi'im, how do we know that Nevi'im are associated with Tamar? D'yomar Rabbi Levi, Masoros b'yodeinu me'avoseinu. We have a tradition from our predecessors. Amoz ve'amatziah achim hoyu. Amoz was a brother of Amatziah. Now, Amatziah was from the Malchi Beis David, and they come from Tamar. So naturally, his brother Amoz comes from the same source, from Tamar. Now, what do we know about Amoz? Uksiv Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz. The prophet Yeshayahu is the son of Amoz. So we can see that Yeshayahu, who was a prophet, is also a descendant from Tamar. The Omar Rabbi Levi. Once again, there is a slash indicating that this is a new idea. Rabbi Levi tells us, Dover Zem Aseres B'Yodeinu Me'Avoseinu, the following we have as a tradition from our predecessors, Mokum Oron Eino Min Hamida. The area taken up by the Oron in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies of the Beis HaMikdash, the area that the Oron occupied does not figure in the calculations that one makes when calculating the length and width of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This will become clearer as we go on in the Gemara. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a Tanaic source that bears this out. Oroin She'osa Moshe, the holy ark that Moshe Rabbeinu made for the Luchos, for the Ten Commandments. Yesh Lo Eser Amos L'chol Ruach. When you measure the distance from each wall of this box that we call the Oron, from each side of the Oron, if you measure from each side of the Oron toward the opposite wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you will find 10 Amos. So one would say that if from each wall of the Oron to the opposite wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, to the facing wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there was 10 Amos. The length and width of the Kodesh HaKodeshim would be more than 10 amos, because our measuring is taking place from the wall of the Aron to the facing wall. What about the area of the Aron itself? So you would assume that the area of the Kodesh HaKodeshim itself would be more than 10 by 10 amos. Or let's say more accurately, more than 20 by 20 amos. Because from each wall of the Aron, from each side of the Aron, you're measuring 10 amos to the facing wall of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So from the north side and the south side, 10 amos. And from the east side and the west side, 10 amos. That would give you an area from the walls alone of the Aron. You're accounting for 20 amos. What about the area of the Aron itself? And yet, there's another pasuk that says, "Ulefnei hadvir esrim amo oirech v'esrim amo roichav." The expression "lefnei hadvir," dvir is the term for the wall separating the kodesh from the kodesh hakodeshim, the heichal from the kodesh hakodeshim. So the pasuk is saying, within the dvir, there was an area that measured 20 amos by 20 amos. The bracketed section we will skip. It doesn't seem to contain anything that's relevant to our sugya at hand, and our note on the outside margin indicates why we chose to do this. Aron gufei hecho havakoi. If you say that the entire length and width of the length of the Kodesh HaKodeshim was 20, the width was 20, where was the Aron itself standing? You have to say that its presence was there, it stood miraculously. If we take a look at the scheme that we've included on the bottom of our Gemara, you'll notice we have a square area called Kodesh HaKodeshim, measuring 20 by 20. We've positioned, for illustrative purposes, in the middle of this square, a small rectangular image called the Aron. The Aron itself measured 1.5 by 2.5. 1.5 amos wide, 2.5 amos long. The dimension from the side of the Aron to the facing wall, we've indicated, is 10 amos in all directions, 10 amos. So if you measure 10 amos from one wall of the Aron to its facing wall, and 10 amos of the Aron to the other facing wall, that alone is 20 amos. What about the area between the area that the Aron itself occupied? How in the world can the entire Kodesh HaKodeshim be listed as 20 amos, a full 20 amos and not more? So this shows us that the Aron itself did not take up any space. That idea or that phenomenon is miraculous. Continuing in the Gemara. As you can see, we have a new marking coming up. We should also note, of course, that we have a slash mark that indicates that which follows is a new idea. We have a double underline, and the double underlining in this sugya features names. And immediately after each name, and this continues quite a way down this omid, and it continues on to the next omid as well, there are triangles. And in our note in the outside margin, the Mivneh heading, you have a double underline featured, Hadgoshas Rabbonim. This is a highlighting of rabbis, Shidorshu Bigeres Purim, that delivered lectures on the Megillas Esther. And the triangle is around an expression, Posach Lepischo Lahai Parshosa. Psichos, that means introductions, psichos, drashas sh'rabbonim, be'inyan igeres purim. Before they got into the topic of the contents of the Megillah itself, they had an opening remark. So what the Gemara here records are the opening sentences of each one of these rabbis when they wanted to hold forth on the topic of Purim. As we go on, the opening sentences are not necessarily taken from the Megillah itself, but rather they open up with psukim that we will try to tie in to the Megillah to sort of establish a theme of their lecture. So let us start. Rabbi Yonasan, Pasach lo pischo lahai parshosa mehocha. Pasach lo pischo was an opening remark, lahai parshosa, to this topic, the topic of the Purim story, mehocha, from the following. And we'd cite this pasuk from Yeshaya, that says, v'kamti alehem. This pasuk is in the context of retribution taken by the Almighty on Bovel. And it says there, v'ichrati lebovel shem u'sha'or v'nin v'neched ne'um Hashem. The word in this pasuk, nin, is a lotion of memshola, of ruling. And now the Gemara breaks down the pasuk for us to understand its connection. Shem, zehaksav. The pasuk, let's not forget, is a reference to I will obliterate Bovel. So I will obliterate their script, their ksav. Sha'ar, zeh loshon, their language. Nin, zeh malchus, their empire, their rulership. The neched, zu Vashti. The word neched is a reference to Vashti, who is associated with as being the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, and of course, before we go on, it goes without saying that you can see that the tie-in to Purim is Vashti, that with the retribution of Bovel continues into is a lead-in, or it's like its final destruction or obliteration is with the death of Vashti, which appears at the beginning of the Purim story. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Pasach Lo Pischo Lahai Parshos Mehocha. He cites another pasuk in Sefer Yeshaya, Tachas Hanatzutz Yale Broish V'Tachas Hasirpod Yale Hadas. Now we've written in between the lines the continuation of the pasuk because it will be featured in the continuation of the Gemara. It says in that pasuk, V'hoya Lashem L'Shem L'Ois Oilom Lo Yikores. And now the Gemara breaks down the pasuk. If you scan ahead the next several lines of Gemara, you'll see underlinings. The underlinings are phrases from this pasuk. Tachas Hanatzutz. That's a reference to Tachas Haman Arasha, in place of Haman the evil, She'osa Atzma Vidazara, who had made himself, viewed himself as an idol, as an individual to be worshipped. And how is that alluded to in this pasuk from Yeshaya? Dichtiv uvuchol hanatzutzim uvuchol hanahalulim. So this pasuk that's the Gemara just quoted, uvuchol hanatzutzim, is a pasuk dealing with idols. So you see the word naatzutzim, that's like the word naatzutz. And as we said, Haman had viewed himself as an idol. So to replace Haman, tachas hanatzutz ya'ale barosh. Zeh Mordechai, the word there will arise, Barosh. Barosh is associated with Mordechai. Shinikra Roish L'chol HaBesamim. The word Barosh is associated with the word head of. Mordechai, we'll see very shortly how he is the head or the chief of spices. Not in terms of a minister of spices, but rather the spice associated with Mordechai's name is the most important of the list of spices. Shinemar. And now we have a pasuk from Sefer Shmos that deals with the mitzvah of taking spices to in the Beis Hamikdash, in the Mishkan activity. It says there, V'ato kach lecha besamim roish muror doror. Umetargaminon, the targum, the Aramaic explanation of mor dror is mori dichi. Notice the expression mori dichi, very similar. If you were to make one word out of that, you would get something very close to Mordechai. So Mordechai is associated as the Aramaic version of mor dror, which is rosh. It's the, as the pasuk said, kach lecha besamim rosh. And our pasuk that we're darshaning right now said Ya le Barosh, so that instead of the idol there will arise, instead of the idolatrous Haman will arise Mordechai. Tachas han sirpod. This is once again the pasuk that we're darshaning. That instead of the sirpod, what's that a reference to? Tachas vashti harosha. Instead of vashti, the evil. Bas benoy shel Nebuchadnezzar Rosha, she was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, who's infamous as associated with Shesoraf Refidas Beis Hashem. The word Soraf Refidas seems to be a contraction of the word Sirpod, Soraf Refidas. The Refidas is an expression the Marshal says, a reference to the cover of the Oron, from where the Shechina, the Divine Presence, used to emanate. And the Oron is essentially the Iker of the Beis HaMikdash, the mainstay of the Beis HaMikdash. So Nebuchadnezzar is portrayed as the one who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Dichtiv Refidasoi Zohav. That's a posuk that's associated with the, as we mentioned before, the Oron, the Kaporos of the Oron, which was made of gold. So again, to review, Tachas HaSirpod, in place of Vashti, who was a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, Ya'ale Hadas. That's also from the Pasuk we're darshaning. Ze Esther Hatzadekes Shenikres Hadasa. Esther has another name, and that's Hadasa Shenema Vayi Oimein Es Hadasa. Vahoyo Lashem Lashem Ze Mikra Megillah. Lois Oilom Lo Yikores Elu Yemei Purim. The proclamation of the glory of Hashem through the reading of the Megillah will be a sign forever, never to cease. That's a reference to Purim, which is a holiday that will always be observed. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Posach lo pischolai parshosu mehocha. He would start his Megillah lecture from the following posach. Posach in Devorim. Vayol kasher sos Hashem aleichem leitiv eschem, kein yosis lehara eschem. What we will do here is give a superficial translation that is not accurate, but we're deliberately going to present an inaccurate translation in order to set the stage for the Gemara. The pasuk says that just like Hashem had joy in bestowing benefit to you, so too he will enjoy bestowing evil and retribution to you. So to this the Gemara asks, and this is a long question. You'll notice we have a long question marking to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a kuf, kushya, with a vertical dash line. And in the outside margin we have, under our no-say heading, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sameach B'Mapalosim Shel Rishonim. The Kadosh Baruch Hu does not have joy with the downfall or the destruction of the wicked. So that gives rise to the question. We just read a pasuk that says that just like Hashem experiences joy in bestowing plenty and benefit to the receivers, to us, so too he will have joy in bestowing retribution upon us. But that runs against what we know. Umi chodi HaKadosh Baruch. Chodi means happy. Umi chodi HaKadosh Baruch b'mapolosan shel rishayim. Does HaKadosh Baruch Hu experience joy with the downfall of the wicked? So that even if we may be wicked, we may be rishayim, but to associate the retribution of the wicked with joy, that is not true. And the Gemara is asking, does HaKadosh Baruch Hu have joy with the downfall of the wicked? V'haksiv. We have a pasuk. The background to the pasuk is where the king Yehoshaphat goes out and wars against Ammon, of the Ammonim and the Givonim, and there's a war, and he defeats them, and it says, "Betzeis lefnei acholotz v'oimrim hoidu l'ashem ki li'oilom chazdoi." Why, in this pasuk, does the expression ki tov not appear? In other words, it doesn't say here koidu l'ashem ki tov, which is mashma, it is good the Rashi says, you can see we have a star in the Rashi. Hodu Hashem Kitov Mashma Toiv Shekilsoi Lefonov Al Zos, which would have been Mashma that it's good for him to have been praised over this. So why is the expression Ki Tov missing? Lefi, the answer to this is She'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Someach B'Mapoloson Sherishoyim, that even though we have an obligation to thank Hashem, but if you, by inserting Ki Tov, it would imply a sense of joy over their downfall. But the Kodesh Baruch Hu does not have joy over their downfall. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, another illustration of this, Mai Dechtiv, it says that the splitting of the sea upon the leaving of Mitzrayim, by Kriyas Yamsuf, Velo Korav Zeh El Zeh Kol HaLayla, that's the Pasuk, Bikshu Malchus Shoreis L'Mashira, at the time of the splitting of the sea, which involved also the drowning of the army of the Egyptians, it says that the Malachi Ashoris wanted to sing praise to Hashem. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded and said, My subjects, my creations are drowning and you're singing praise to me. In other words, this is not a time that I want to hear praise. I am not in a state of mind, so to speak, kivyochol, that wants to hear song and praise. In other words, I have to carry this out. This is the law of the land. When people are rishoyim and they deserve punishment, they get it. But that doesn't mean that it's time for shira and for song. With all of this, we have to understand what the opening pasuk that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi cited here, which said, "V'hoyu kasher sasa Hashem aleichem leitiv eschem kein yosis lora eschem." So, and as we mentioned, the seeming explanation was that just like Hashem has joy in bestowing plenty, He also has joy in wreaking havoc. We just demonstrate, though, that can't be. He doesn't have joy in serving retribution. Omar Rebbe Lazar, who enosos? The Kodesh Baruch Hu, in fact, does not have joy when retribution is served. Avol achirim mesis, but he causes others to be full of joy. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Achirim mesis, ukshinischaivu kloyo bimei Haman, when the Jews deserve destruction in the time of Haman, hayu oyvein smechem lahen. The enemies of the Jews were very happy to be able to have a chance to destroy the Jews. So the happiness in the pasuk that's referred to here is not the Kodesh Baruch Hu's own happiness, but the happiness that others have in their chance to carry out the punishment to the Jews. The Daikonami, if you look at the pasuk carefully, you can see this, Dichtiv, Kain Yosis. The verb form of Yosis indicates causing others to be happy. Veloksiv Yosus doesn't say he himself will be happy. Shma Mina. So you see now from the careful reading of the pasuk, not like we explained originally, and we gave our disclaimer, of course, that when we opened up this piece of Gemara, we mentioned that the translation would be inaccurate according to the Maskona of the Gemara. So that the term Yosis does not indicate the Kodesh Baruch Hu's joy, but rather it indicates the Kodesh Baruch Hu's need to carry out retribution through arousing the enemies of the Jews upon us. And when they arise, they have happiness. It's the happiness that Kodesh Baruch Hu is causing them to have, but not that HaKodesh Baruch Hu himself experiences joy at that time. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana Posach Lo Pischolai Parshosa Mehocha LeOdom SheToiv LeFonov Nosan Chochma V'Das V'Simcha. This pasuk actually continues, and if you just glance ahead in the Gemara, you'll see it goes on. This is a pasuk from Keheles. It says, "V'lachalte nosan inyules of elichnois losays l'toyv l'fnei l'kim And that we can see from the underlined sections. So the first part of the pasuk of the Adam Shetoiv Lefon of Nosel Chochma Das V'Simcha Zeh Mordechai Atzadik. He is the Adam Tov, the good man that that received wisdom and joy. The Lachoite Nosan Inyan Lesof Lichnos, and to the sinner was given a plan to gather together, to assemble and gather together. Zeh Haman. Haman attempted to gather funds for the king's treasury for the destruction of the Jews. Lo seis l'tev l'fnei l'kim. Zeh Mordechai v'Esther. Dechtiv atosem Esther es Mordechai al beis Haman. The pasuk is describing how the Kodesh Baruch Hu caused it to be that Haman, the Rasha, would be replaced, that he would then be given over, Lases Latov, he would be given over to Mordechai and Esther. And the Pasuk indicates that Esther, in fact, appointed Mordechai over the house or the palace that Haman once had. Rabo bar Oifron, Pazal Pislai, Prashosa Mehocha, Vesamti Kisibe Elon, Vavadi Mishom Melech Vesorim. Melech Zuvashti. Vesorim zeh Haman vaseres bonov. So the pasuk indicates that there will be a destruction of Melech and Sorim, and in fact that's what took place: the destruction of Vashti, Haman, and his 10 sons. Rav Dimi bar Yisro bozol opisul ay parshos semihocha. Ki avodim anachnu uva avdusenu lo azavunu lo azavonu elokenu vayedlenu chesed lefnei malchi poras. Rashi at the top says, "Ki avodim anachnu." Pasuk zeh b'sefer Ezra. This is a pasuk from Sefer Ezra. B'sefer idolenu chesed lefnei sorei pasul seis lanu michya. And the end of the pasuk indicates that we received the kindness. We received kind dealing in the on the part of the kings of Poras. Well, when was this? When were we like slaves? And in our enslavement, we were not abandoned, as the Pasuk says. When was this? This was at the time of Haman. And it was also at that time that the grace of the Jews was seen by the kings of Poras, as of course the whole Purim story unfolded with the turnaround of events from Haman and his rise and eventual fall, and the success and victory of the Jews. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.